Well, we always like to have you guys check us out on Facebook. And, of course, like us, please. And thevalleyoutdoors.com, where you can hook up with any one of the links that we've got. And it'll take you through the vast myriad of the web and drive you down into a wormhole that you'll never come out of.
Oh, no.
There you go. See? Isn't that...
At least you won't need to bookmark it. You're just stuck there.
Exactly. It just... Once you go down that wormhole, it's one of those things. You just suddenly get sucked in and you just start looking at outdoors and the video. That's crazy.
Pictures of us.
Yeah, of us.
That's fun.
Oh, well, maybe not so much. That could think of like
better
fish pictures.
To do.
I'm just changed the Facebook, edited a couple pictures on Facebook. So.
Oh, good.
We hope people can send some of those to us through the Valley Outdoors. Send some stuff to us. Pictures,
yeah, you
of
get
favorite
a big,
fish.
Get a big Tom. Show
their
us.
Their favorite turkey shot and maybe even their favorite time that they had in the opening weekends of fishing that they had wherever in the state you would be. So kind of cool. Led off the top of the show with a little tease, we call it, right?
Yeah, in Radio World, yeah.
Radio World. Redneck Fishing Tournament founder inducted into the Illinois Conservation Foundation Hall of Fame. It just goes to show you that you too can become famous if you have a big heart, a love for the environment, and start a weird fishing tournament that's won by someone brandishing a big dip net and more likely also a face mask. That's what's happened to Betty DeFord, who started the Redneck Fishing Tournament on a channel of the Illinois River in Bath, Illinois, in 2005. On April 6th, the Illinois Conservation Foundation will induct DeFord into its Hall of Fame for raising public awareness of the dangers of Asian carp. And of course, we've got them throughout parts of our area here and south of the Mississippi, as you probably are aware. Ava, it's been one of those things that it's everywhere. And it's a tremendous honor to get this recognition, she had said. And from the beginning, the tournament's always been designed to be a community event. I'm thrilled and thankful that people are coming together to keep it going. Due to medical issues, she is stepping away from the tournament, but organizers like Nikki Gregerson are filling the gap and making sure the Redneck Fishing Tournament lives on. The tournament does not allow poles and hooks. Instead, contestants arm themselves with nets and go out in motorboats. The noise of the motors prompts silver carp, a kind of an Asian carp, to jump out of the water. Have you seen that before?
I haven't.
It's crazy.
Just the motor does that?
Oh, yeah. And they'll literally, they put cages around the drivers in a lot of cases if they're doing that, so they don't get hit.
Oh, gosh.
A jet skier actually was going about 60 or so. One hit him, he broke his neck and died. Yeah.
How big are these things?
20 pounds, 25 pounds.
Well, that's big enough.
Monsters,
yeah.
Speaking of which, and they leap out of the water once they're airborne. They're scooped up in nets. Trouble is, the silver carp get big. An average one measures 24 to 39 inches, but they get considerably bigger, up to 55 inches, and can weigh 100 pounds.
So on average, they're about 20, but they can be 100?
Average, they're probably 20 pounds, yeah. A fish like that flying through the air can hurt you. Bruises and broken noses are commonplace, hence the hockey masks and other protective gear. In keeping with the redneck theme, many teams go shirtless and wear overalls. Pair that with a hockey mask, a football helmet, or like one individual last year in a dark Darth Vader costume, you've got the look that folks remember. That's the first tournament.
The costume part has to be, like, the best part.
It's crazy. The first tournament in 2005 attracted 200 participants. From there, attendance grew, attracting participants as far away as Europe and Asia. In recent years, COVID led to the tournament being postponed. But in 2018, more than 5,300 fish were removed from the river. Earlier tournaments caught more than 10,000 silver carp. That's a lot of fish. In a YouTube video, one participant said that there was someone offered to fry silver carp, but noted that the fish are quite bony. He said he'll stick to just catching them rather than...
I was going to say, usually any type of carp. Do you know of a type of carp people actually eat?
Just a regular grass carp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Golden carp. I have to forget the actual terminology, the genus and species, but nonetheless, it's just your...
Are these invasive?
Yeah.
Got it.
These are the invasives. DeFord has contributed the proceeds to various charities, including one for homeless veterans. That's kind of cool. Really cool, actually.
Yeah, that's anything awesome. To help out.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Jumping quickly into a bizarre story, authorities have seized $31 million in taxidermy collection in a mysterious raid. For most hunters, taxidermy collection is an invaluable, into the truest sense of the word. Any European or shoulder mounts on the wall get there through their own toil or that of someone else. A dollar amount fails to capture the personal history and those fond memories because, you know, it's not about the how much you spent to do it. It's having that memory on the wall.
Right.
So not that anyone would actually pay a whole heck of a lot for a handful of middling bucks and a raghorn bull, but two warehouses recently unearthed outside Valencia, Spain, however, gave new meaning to the value and the phrase private taxidermy collection. On April 6th, the Valencia Guardia Civil, which is basically their police, seized 1,090 individual mounted animals and decorations in the 538,000 square foot buildings, including full body mounts of an elephant, rhinoceros, Cape buffalo, lion, polar bear, lynx, wolverine, badger, ibex, numerous crocodiles, and more than a dozen Marco Polo and other Argali sheep. The search party also counted 198 ivory elephant tusks. The collection also included more than 405 species listed as vulnerable or endangered under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, such as a snow leopard and Bengal tiger. There was an addax, critically endangered white and screwhorn antelope, and even a scimitar horned oryx, which they've been listed extinct in the world since the year 2000, though are still found on some private ranches in the U.S. And of those specimens, they could carry consequences to the owner without proper documentation. According to the press release, their agents got wind of this animal assemblage back in 2021. The National Protection Team executed the search, and they were surprised at what they found, calling it the largest find nationally protected mounted animals and one of the largest in Europe. Lieutenant Carlos Dominguez, head of the Protection Service, said it was amazing and far exceeded our expectations. The animals estimated in the collection were worth some 29 million euros on the black market, which is about 31.3 million in U.S. dollars. I don't get it. Though most English publications have not named a suspect, they say that the warehouses and estate recently raided in the town of Batera were formerly owned by a prominent Valencian businessman, and he died in 2014. They expect much of the collection was hunted or purchased by the late steel magnate. Massive business group and estate, which also included soccer and basketball teams, he passed to his sons. Some of the mounts look pretty old, so it's possible they were acquired prior to the convention of the restrictions in harvesting and could be exempt, but it's as equally as possible that some specimens lack also the rarely granted import and export issues and could even be jail time under Spanish trafficking laws, but there's not publicly available proof that he had done anything wrong. If the owner shot one of those big bull elk on a legal free-range hunt in North America, we hope he gets to enjoy their antlers. If he or his father smuggled them, less than 500 remaining addax antelope in their range, you might have to see it next time in a museum.
Jeez.
So, I think we'll take a break. What do you think? Does that work for you? Yeah. Let's jump to a break.
I need to digest what just happened.
Yes, digest. Yes, exactly. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the top bass lures of the pros. Stay tuned. More of that coming up. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies? So, Ava, I know you're always wanting to know the top pros techniques and having them spill the goods on what's the
Eric,
hottest.
I live for it.
I know you do. You're into that. I am too.
I'm here for it.
Here's the best part. Our audience is, they really are. There's a ton of bass fishermen out there, and I love it because bass fishing is fun. So we're going to jump into this. We're going to talk about the top bass pros, top lures of the bass pros, and some of the ways that these guys fish them. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into this. The Strike King KVD Sexy Dog. That is a topwater plug in the sexy shad color. And Greg Bohannon, Arkansas-based FLW angler, uses it. He loves the bait's versatility. There's always some type of topwater bite going on in summer. You can fish that sexy dog in shallow water or on laydowns, docks, or in open water. Looks for shallow fish relating to some type of cover. Suspended off the bottom, he'll pull it right over the top of their heads. He also uses it for a search bait. So when you're looking for fish that are active in open water as well as around schooling fish, he'll mix up the speed, etc., to see what the fish will do. Let the fish tell you what they want. The Castaic Jerky J swim bait. I love swim baits. Those are awesome. Jason Lambert, Tennessee-based major league fishing angler, uses that. Given how many lakes and countries across the U.S. have shad, the shad-style swim bait's effective almost anywhere. And he pairs it with basically a hook with a jig head. And what's important here is for walleyes, swim baits work extremely well. At the same time, in brush, in some of the western impoundments that you'll find if it's reservoirs. He'll find offshore fish, put the swim bait jig combo right in front of the fish, and he'll change that presentation up. And, of course, it depends on where the wind's coming from. Lunker hunt compact frogs. I don't know if anybody's fished a lot of frogs out there, but it is a technique to fish a frog.
My husband loves it.
It is fun to watch.
Just something
blow up
to do.
Yep. This is from Matt Array from North Carolina, Bassmaster Elite Angler. Why this hot weather bass lure is so good. Although the bite can be slow at times with the compact frog, it will catch some of the biggest fish in the lake through summer months. He targets heavily shaded shallows where these bass like to congregate, docks, overhanging trees, and bushes. It's right where the sunfish hang out, which is what the bass will feed on. Casts a little bit past the target, uses it to walk the dog retrieve, pauses the lure over the highest percentage areas, and lets her have it, as the saying goes. The Z-Man, Mag Fatty Z from Miles Berghoff. He uses that. He's an FLW angler as well. He Texas rigs this worm and half ounce to quarter ounce tungsten worm weight and a Fitzgerald flipping head between the hook and the weight. Slowly drags it along the bottom, maintaining constant bottom contact depending how the fish are reacting. He may dead stick it, which is really amazing. You pull a bait on the bottom. If you stop it, it just drives fish crazy because it's like, wait a minute, you're not moving. You're okay. Time to eat, and they pound on it. It's awesome. It is awesome. Same thing with a Ned rig. Same kind of combination. The Berkeley J Walker. Is that like a Jimmy J Walker?
Sure.
Okay, we'll just go with that. Mike Huff, Kentucky-based Bassmaster Elite Angler Series gentleman. Top water bait allows him to cover a lot of water, and you can use it anywhere on the lake, the shoreline to offshore, and use it a lot in the backwater creeks and schooling fish as well, and use the walk-the-dog technique. Strike King, 3.5-inch coffee tubes. It's self-explanatory. They work everywhere. Matt Becker, Pennsylvania-based FLW angler. It is versatile, as he said, and watermelon and green pumpkin are the number one colors. Hands down, I would totally agree. Just about everything you can catch on that. The Norman NXS crankbait, Micah Frazier, and in the Bassmaster Elite Angler. Great summer crankbait, gets down to 16 to 17 feet, which is often difficult with crankbaits. That's awesome. So check out the Norman NXS crankbait. And the Missile Bait Bomb Shot, Cody Holgan, he's an Oregon-based Bassmaster Elite Angler. Neutral buoyancy gives the bomb shot better action than the drop shot baits that he's tried, and works quite well in the summer. Main lake fish with electronics find him and drop shot the bait right to him. Big bite 10-inch worm, of course, that's always good. Drew Benton, Florida-based Bassmaster lead angler. He likes that as well. It's moving further into summer. They become lethargic, and a large, slow-moving meal is welcomed.
Oh, I bet.
Last but not least, Justin Lucas. I know Justin, Major League Fishing angler, and he's looking at the Berkeley Chapo. That's a rear
Chapo.
Prop. The Chapo. The rear prop gives the Chapo great action. He can cover a lot of water to find active fish. The 105 size in bone is his top choice. He throws it first thing in the morning and last hours of the day, and works pretty well as far as that goes. So, yeah, what can I say? Kind of a nice little tidbit to start the season out, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm dying to learn about this tick.
Yeah. Single tick bite can cause life-threatening meat allergy. As the tick season comes into gear, it's a good idea to know potentially life-threatening food allergies called an alpha-gal syndrome. It may occur after certain tick bites, especially the Lone Star tick. Guess where that comes from?
Texas.
Yep. According to the Center for Disease Control, an allergy to alpha-gal refers to having a severe, potentially life-threatening allergy to a carbohydrate molecule called galactose alpha-1,3-galactose that's often found in mammalian or red meat, according to Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Academy. The Lone Star tick, named for its characteristic white star shape on the back, would suggest is shaped like Texas and commonly found in the South. It first picks up the alpha-gal molecule from animals and mammalians and cow and sheep and then transferred it to humans after a bite. So Mayo says it's not good and you can be treated with the cancer drug
cetuximab.
And not that I want to get into that, but getting bit by that tick is not good. Always, anytime you have a tick, make sure you have that tick completely removed and make sure you wear light colored clothing so that you can see if you do have one of those on you. And if you do get bit and you remove it, clean the bite area, wash your hands, rubbing alcohol, soap, and water. And permethrin is one of the big things that prevents those ticks from getting on you.
Gotcha.
So, well, gentlemen and ladies, thank you for joining us this week. Ava, as always, superb job. My name is Eric. Yeah, you're welcome. And Don's out fishing. We'll talk to you sometime soon. Actually, he's turkey hunting, not fishing. Wish he was. Talk to you later. Bye.